You can talk about the current state of affairs in American politics and in society more broadly a bunch of different ways. We'll focus on psychology in this hour. Our guest gave the American psyche some analysis and found some real problems, and that was more than 10 years ago when he first published his book. Our collective issues with reality and decision-making have continued, so Bryant Welch updated his book called State of Confusion: Political Manipulation and the Assault on the American Mind. Bryant Welch clearly spent a lot of time in college because he's both a clinical psychologist and an attorney. He spent years working for the American Psychological Association in Washington, coming out against its position on torture during the last Bush administration. Bryant practices psychology near San Francisco. Thanks for joining us today.
It's a pleasure, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
So I'm going to guess you felt there were a few things that needed updating in the book. This was still relevant.
Yeah, I think most Americans now, I did, I think, identify a lot of the trends we're seeing now 10 to 20 years ago and wrote about them in a book I published in 2008, State of Confusion. But those trends have continued, and the deterioration I described at that time has gotten much, much worse. So it did seem to me to update it, and there also is some good news in terms of things that we're learning about the mind and some opportunities we have to turn things around in this country if we will pay attention to the mind, which is the instrument with which we're trying to address all these things, and it's the instrument that is creating a lot of the problems. So that's why I wrote the update.
So, Bryant, if the United States were a client, how concerned would you be about it?
I'd be very, very concerned about it, and I am very, very concerned about it. I think most Americans now, Jeff, would recognize that there's something not quite right in America, and I think they would agree that it feels like it's something of a psychological nature, but they're hard pressed to know how to put their finger on it. And people focus on Donald Trump and rant about Donald Trump. But Donald Trump is really just a symptom of the problem. We forget that 60 million American minds thought Donald Trump was not only just fine, but in fact a wonderful thing to have as our president. So what I've done in State of Confusion is to try to look at our minds and to come up with some understanding of why, as a country, we're functioning in such an ineffective way in so many ways and in dangerous ways in others.
So let me ask, Brian, how literal you're being here. I mean, do overheated politics and some dysfunction there, which, you know, we expect some level of dysfunction in politics, I guess, really indicate troubling mental trends for the country at large?
Well, I think there are troubling mental trends. And the politics is both a symptom and a cause of the problem, which, as I describe, in State of Confusion. I think to understand that, we have to start with just a few fundamental assumptions and understandings of the human mind. The fundamental task of the mind is to create our understanding of the world, our sense of reality, if you will. And we tend to think that, oh, reality is just something out there that we look and perceive. But it's not that way. There's an enormous amount of stuff out in the world, in the reality, and our mind has to organize it in some type of cohesive way that at least creates a reassuring sense that we know what reality is and what it isn't. And when the mind has a hard time doing that, it gets very anxious, and then it starts to falter. So you've got a mind that is limited. It's a miraculous organ, but it's like the stomach or the heart or anything else. It's limited, and it's affected by how it's treated. So if you look at that mind that's struggling to create a reality sense, the world is getting more and more complex, faster and faster, and at the same time, the things that have traditionally supported the mind, particularly the family and the sense of community, which is so important to the mind, is being eroded out from under us. In addition, the incidence of things that rattle the mind, what we call psychological traumas, are growing exponentially. more than half of the children in this country are growing up in a family that's lacking one or the other of their biological parent. Now, those things are extremely important for the functioning of the mind. Then you have the political climate in which there are people who have become expert in how to disrupt the functionings of the mind. And in State of Confusion, I talk about three particular states of mind that I argue are the real battleground states. They're not blue or red states, but they're psychological states that if political operatives decide to strike the mind in those regions of the mind, they can be very disruptive and undermine the stability of the mind. And I call that political gaslighting, but there are three regions of paranoid functioning, sexual identifications and functioning, and then the role of greed and envy. And these areas have been manipulated badly by political gaslighters who have increasingly effective, powerful tools with which to reach right inside the human mind. So this is having a terribly disruptive effect. The book I wrote in 2008 focused on George Bush and the problems that Karl Rove and others were creating. But now, in looking at the second book, what you find is a lot of those techniques are being used by political pundits at all points on the political spectrum. It came in through the radical right, but now it's everywhere, and we're all paying a price for it.
Much more to talk about with Bryant Welch. We'll explore those battleground states of paranoia, sexual perplexity, and envy. His book is called State of Confusion, Political Manipulation and the Assault on the American Mind. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Bryant Welch and you in a minute five. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Bryant Welch, both psychologist, as in PhD, and lawyer. He is trained well in both professions, and he's written a book looking at the American state of the psyche through a political lens. It's actually an updating of a book that he wrote in 2008 called State of Confusion, Political Manipulation and the Assault on the American Mind. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about Americans and their grip on reality as a society, politically in particular. 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Brian, why don't we touch on politics before we get too much further into the mind, just to address that, because I'm sure there are people who are going to hear what you're saying about the fact that you wrote the book originally about the W. Bush years, and now you're writing in the age of Trump, and they'll write you off as a liberal. Is that the case?
Well, I am a liberal, and I'm sure it affects my mind just as our orientation affects everybody's orientation affects their mind. But the points that I'm making in State of Confusion, it's not that there's one point on the political continuum that is correct. I actually worked for a Republican congressman many years ago when I suppose that meant something very different. But the point that I'm trying to make in the book is that the stability of our mind is absolutely critical to our continuation as a democracy. And the issue is not whether my political views are the correct ones. The question is whether our collective minds are stable enough that we can live with one another despite those differences in our political perspective. When the mind is creating a reality, if it feels comfortable and secure about its own reality sense, then when we see someone who has a different reality, it's not so threatening to us. We can tolerate it. So the problem I'm identifying in State of Confusion is really our inability to tolerate different points of view because our minds are so wobbly. It's a limited apparatus to begin with. It's been subjected to trauma, and it's being bombarded by political gaslighting. So if you look at the last Republican election, you know, there were 16 candidates with a whole range of conservative perspectives, and yet we selected Donald Trump. So the issue is not whose politics are correct. there are very good arguments for conservative positions on fiscal responsibility, on tax structure, and so on. So then the country has always had differences. But now our minds are too threatened by psychological factors to be able to sit with one another and tolerate those differences and debate them.
Well, now, those psychological factors, you take some of this back to the September 11th attacks. Is that still a big motivating factor for the American mind?
It's still a huge, undigested, traumatic experience. And I describe the psychological experience for America of having quote, foreigners come into our country and play havoc with our personal safety. The violation, and it particularly for reasons that I go into in the book, 9/11 permeated our paranoid barriers in the mind and really rattled us in terms of our confusion about how safe are we in the world, how stable is my mind, and this is a kind of vulnerability that America has always been subjected to. After World War II, when we lost our external enemy of Hitler, we became disoriented and we started projecting all kinds of fears onto the Soviet Union and felt like they were inside us in our own country. So it's a very destabilizing event for reasons that I talk about in the book.
One of the major points, though, is that you describe our collective reaction to September 11th in particular, something of a dopamine cycle. Can you explain that?
Well, yeah, the agitation that we... one of the things about psychological trauma is, as unpleasant as it is, it jacks up the brain because of the excitement. And when you're working with trauma patients, one of the fascinating and counterintuitive things you will see is when they're in one state of trauma, they try to get out of it by moving into a higher state of trauma. So there is a saying, trauma begets trauma. And what people are chasing is the kind of dopamine rush where the thought is, if I can just get more, I can get enough that I'll feel okay. So you have people chasing an increasingly negative set of experiences. It's like the kind of tolerance we build up with drugs, that we want more and more and more. And so trauma begets trauma, and it's a real danger that as a country spins out of control, the reaction to it is to spin more out of control. And that's when things get scary and get dangerous.
Bryant Welch, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, psychologist and attorney. His book, State of Confusion, Political Manipulation and the Assault on the American Mind, has been updated from its original 2008 publishing. As you work your way into talking about the election of Donald Trump, Bryant, I get the sense, and if it's not intended, tell me, that the situation was somewhat like a person marrying a spouse that they think will fix their lives.
Well, yes, and you're correct. And let me focus that just a little bit more. What Donald Trump did, and it, you're right, it is not unlike some ill-conceived romantic experiences that people regret not too long thereafter. But what Donald Trump did for people was create an internal, visceral experience that was pleasing to them. Now, how did he do it, and what was it like? Well, for millions of Americans, there are all kinds of unpleasant psychological pressures. Let's just take political correctness. For a lot of people, political correctness taxes the mind. It strains the mind to have to give up the scapegoating benefits of bigotry and prejudice, sexism, racism. And so we can struggle with that, but if the mind is beleaguered to begin with, fearful of economic uncertainty, bewildered by the amount of change going on around them and frightened by it, then along comes someone who offers them this magical elixir, which is what Donald Trump did, that you don't have to tax your mind that way. Don't worry about these stresses that understanding other people requires. go and indulge yourself. And look at me. If I want to grab a woman by the genitals, I can do it and get away with it. If I want to eat 12 cheeseburgers and have 6 huge Diet Cokes, I can do it. You don't have to compromise what you want, your ultimate wish for self-indulgence. You can defy it. Now, ultimately, for a lot of people, that is an experience which I think the best way to understand it is it almost starts to feel ecstatic. And if you watch the Trump rallies where some remarkable things are tossed out and the crowd, it's like a feeding frenzy of giving them this experience for which they are deliriously happy. So it is like your teenager who has fallen in love for the first time, and they're a little crazy about it and pursuing it. So I think your metaphor is apt, and Donald Trump gives people a profound, visceral, psychological experience, not unlike ecstasy.
But you do also examine the people who did not want Trump, and what do you see there?
Well, I don't think they functioned real well either, because they were unable to defeat him. You know, this is certainly the most bizarre character we've ever had run for president of the United States, much less get elected. And yet we stood there, many of us, like dumb animals, as he came on the scene, denying that he could possibly get anywhere, and then we watched him get elected. So we are not functioning very well either. Whatever your political point of view of it is, the simple fact is the American mind is beleaguered in ways it doesn't have to be beleaguered, and in ways that we can improve its functioning if we will pay attention to how the mind works and what kind of things we need to do to enhance its functioning.
Bryant Welch, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is both psychologist and attorney, and he's written a book called State of Confusion, Political Manipulation, and the Assault on the American Mind, first published in 2008, updated very recently. You can join our conversation on the Exchange. How do you think the American psyche is doing? We are live on this Friday. I know you've gotten used to it not happening on Friday, but here we are, 800-838-3760, ready to take your phone calls or send your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Okay, Chapter 2 gets into gaslighting. Would you lay out the concept for the people who don't know it?
Yeah, gaslighting is a debilitating psychological process. The term gaslight comes from a 1944 movie starring Ingrid Bergman, in which a husband tries to drive his wife crazy by undercutting her own trust in her own ability to create a reality sense, to know what's real and what's not real. And the way he does that, amongst many other things, is he raises and lowers the gaslight in the house, and when she comments on it, he denies that there has been any change in the gaslight, suggests then that she is maybe losing her mind, and gradually she begins to mistrust her own mental processes, becomes more and more dependent on him, and functions less and less effectively in her own right. So what we are, the extrapolation to the political arena, this is something that in the mental health field we see happening in families, in marriages. It can happen in businesses, corporations. I've seen it happen in Little League baseball teams. So it's where people step in and try to undercut people's ability to use their own mind, so that then they become more docile and more controllable. And that's what you see. I think it started in mass media. Now, these things have been going on since the beginning of time, but it's only recently we've had powerful means to do this to people, with television and now social media being very prime examples.
And you really sum it up well with the use of the great philosopher Groucho Marx, who are you going to believe, me or your lion eyes?
Yes, that's right. That's right. And it does come down to that. And one, for me personally, one of the most shocking things about updating State of Confusion was to look at how easy it was to deceive people now compared to 10 years ago. In the first version of the book, I was describing some of the very clever, ingenious kinds of manipulations that I thought Karl Rove was imposing on the American public. Now, 10 years later, what's striking is you don't need that kind of ingenious deception of other people. It's much easier. You have Steve Bannon or Kellyanne Conway is a good example where she doesn't have to give any content to deceiving people. She just assumes a posture and a facial expression that suggests that she is, in fact, answering the challenge that's been presented to her, and the content is just vacuous. But people think that because the outlines of an answer are being presented, that's good enough. And that's how uncritical and unchallenging a lot of American minds are today.
So it seems like that we need to move beyond the emotional reactions. And it seems to me that when people go to places like, whatever their particular flavor of information is, if it does come with a bit of a slant, that they're looking for confirmation of their own bias. So this suggests that there are steps that we can take to avoid being misled.
Absolutely. And if you look at the comment I made about the nature of the mind is struggling to maintain its own reassuring, independent sense of what's real and what's not real. Now, as the mind begins to wobble in that, yes, we want to go to someone who is going to say the same thing that we want to hear so that it can solidify our own struggling sense of reality. And now, of course, with the mass media, you can dial a reality, whatever reality you want. But that's why people tend to only listen to like-minded people, because they're struggling themselves to maintain the stability of their own mind.
Bryant Welch, our guest, his book, State of Confusion. Here's a call from John in Central Point. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. I just have a comment that I work at a location where there's about 50% Republican and Democrats, and we'll get into discussion, for instance, the wall and why it's necessary, and they always take it as a personal attack. And I sit there and I go, now wait a minute, it's not against him, it's the method that he's taking to get the end. Why doesn't he have a committee decide what's the best five ways to have border security and try to sell it to the American public? But it always ends up in an argument that Donald Trump has done so much for this country in the first year, there's no way you can't like him. And we have to build the wall because 4,000 people were killed by immigrants coming across the wall. And I go, 4,000 people killed? Now you got that mistaken. Your data's incorrect. You know, you need to research it some more. Is there anything that you can say about that? I'll just take the answer off the air.
All right,
yeah,
thanks for that, John.
Absolutely. And my suggestion, and I tread slowly, but if you can get the group to notice the fact that basically you have, for the most part, always liked each other, and begin to get to the question of why is it that the fact we view these things so differently seems to be creating tension and animosity? Why is it that it bothers us if one person supports Trump and the other doesn't support Trump? What's going on psychologically? Because this whole country was conceived to be a cradle in which that kind of difference would be tolerated. So you try to get them to look at what's been making our tolerance so difficult. And what is it about us that's so insecure that we have to get all agitated about these differences? What are we really afraid of? And if you can make that a group problem, not, you know, border security is Trump a good guy or a bad guy? But look at your own mind and why is it? And, the fact of the matter is you live together. You may have at some point, you may play softball together or whatever. Why is this going on? And you get people curious about that. And that's what I'm trying to address in the book, that our minds, we're never going to get to a place, hopefully, where our minds are so cohesive that we all see things the same way. The whole American experiment has been, you can come here with your different points of view and you'll be accepted and embraced. So what's so hard for us on that? And leave the substantive stuff aside. I can't guarantee great results, but I think it shifts the discussion and gets people curious about their mind and the human mind. That, I think, lets you, you're not going to get to a place where you're not half Republicans and half Democrats, but you can get to a place where you're half Republicans and half Democrats who love one another and respect the differences and can step back from DEFCON 4 in terms of how should we defend our borders.
All right, you talk about it in terms of the fact that we are human beings and we do care for each other. State of Confusion, Political Manipulation, and the Assault on the American Mind, the book by Bryant Welch. We'll come back to the Jefferson Exchange and talk more with Bryant and take phone calls and emails from you in a minute 15. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Bryant Welch, who's both an attorney and a clinical psychologist, and he is making us think about how we think because he's examining the way that we get into situations where we really can't seem to agree on anything, and we get really enraged at the people who bring up the opposite argument. His book is called State of Confusion, Political Manipulation, and the Assault on the American Mind. You can join the conversation on the Exchange, 800-838-3760 for your phone calls. Emails go to jx@jeffnet.org. I did ask your political leanings when we got up front because I knew somebody would complain. And sure enough, here's an email from Richard, no town given. He says, though this psychologist is obviously a leftist, if we were not disingenuous, he would admit that Hillary Clinton appealed to her base's fears. All campaigns always present an emergency, climate change, gun violence, that only the nominee can fix. Just more fake telediagnosing as conservatives are mental ward ready from a leftist. That from Richard, no town given.
Well, you know, there's some truth to it. Every mind does present its own reality, and we all operate from that reality. The more uncertain we are about our reality, the more defensive we are in doing that. So that's why, in your previous caller, what I'm saying is, if we can go to a little higher meta level and be looking at the mind and be wondering, and I can assure you I've more than wondered about my own mind over the years, and that's a lot of why I wrote the things I wrote in State of Confusion. So there's no question that we do raise fears, all points on the political spectrum. And what I'm talking about is we need to understand the mind, whether it's a Republican mind or Democratic mind, we need to understand how that fear reverberates through the mind and what we can do about it.
All right, let us take a phone call here. We have Jim and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Bryant Welch.
Hey, Brian. I've been studying logical fallacies for a while and related to political discourse, and I've been amazed at the amount of logical fallacies people adopt as a way to explain or dismiss any criticism. For example, I just had a discussion with somebody about the incidents of gun violence and children that have recently been killed by guns in the home. And the person said, so what are we going to do, ban cars because they kill people? And so the fallacy there is the fallacy of false comparison. And I'm wondering if you've ever looked into why people adopt these fallacies as explanatory constructs without understanding that they are actually a fallacy. Thanks.
All right, thanks,
yeah,
Jim.
Thank you for that, Jim. No, it's a fascinating example and question that you give. And it goes right to the heart of State of Confusion. The logical fallacy is designed to protect a certain organization that particular person has created in their mind. And once we got something that kind of works and kind of explains away some of our anxiety and sense of chaos from not having a reality, we don't want to go back and re-examine that because it's very, very disruptive. So your logical fallacy is an attempt to prop up a reality sense that needs to explain something that would be otherwise disruptive. So it goes right to the heart of the functioning of the American mind that I talk about in the book. And, it's a great example.
And another call from Jeff in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Bryant Welch.
Good morning, Brian. It seems to me that as the situation in this country or in the entire world maybe gets more dire because of perhaps climate change and also the mass amount of information we get from around the world that's kind of disconcerting, that it becomes people become more susceptible to demagoguery and charlatans and conspiracy theories and such because of that. And I think people that believe in conspiracy theories, particularly, they get sort of a sense of importance or power from believing something that they think is special.
Okay, good point there, Jeff. Appreciate that. And Bryant, what do you think?
Yeah, Jeff. No, I think you're absolutely right. If you look at what I think you're referring to as a conspiracy theory, what it does is it takes a person's anxiety about the uncertainty of a lot of life situations, and it props it up with a rigidly constructed alternative reality that the person can grab a hold of and then feel like they know what in fact is going on. So it's a prop for a mind that is otherwise uncertain, has some anxiety and uncertainty it doesn't know what to do with, so it concocts a story that explains.
Staying in the media vein there, Mehdi in Eureka writes in, thank you for the interesting program. I'm curious what Mr. Welch thinks of the effects of Fox News input into our feeble and fragile brains.
Yes. Fox News is, and again, it's Fox News was the first kid on the block. A lot of people are doing what Fox News now does. But yes, I think Fox News with Roger Ailes and Rupert Murdoch was one of the most destructive participants in the undercutting of the American mind that I describe. And I have a whole chapter in the book devoted to Fox News, and it's just a parade of the horribles what they've done to the mind, and now other people are copying it.
I want to be really careful to not go down the road of false equivalence, but do you see similar dangers in the likes of MSNBC?
I see similar dangers, yes, I do. And the way I would describe that, if you can take the content out of both Fox News and MSNBC, what I see, and in other words, you just listen to the intonations and the emotional charging, if you will. It's what one of your early writers said about all groups are doing these things and getting people whooped up. Yes, if you listen to the MSNBC people, in fact, you see a very similar kind of intonation, a sense of outrage, a sense of sarcasm, of disgust, with an underlying message, really, that you kind of ought to hate the person who has a different point of view. So in that important respect, I do see a similarity, and it's what I was referring to earlier when I was saying that Fox News was the first kid on the block, but now the others are doing it, and so it drives a wedge deeper and deeper between people. If you now switch, a lot of my friends won't ever watch Fox News. Well, when I see a big news story, if I'm watching CNN and I don't then watch Fox News, I don't know what's going on in the country, because there are two very, very different realities being piped out at people. And if you're watching Fox News, you got a different understanding of what just happened than if you're watching CNN. So in terms of a country struggling to be less divided, there's nothing worse than we could have than that. So,
a call from Kristen in Dorena. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. I guess my question is, I was wondering, you know, things used to be so much easier, like getting health insurance privately was like closer to $125 19 years ago, and now it's, you know, closer to $600 for a good plan, and housing has become so much more expensive, and there's been such retractions in our economy from the booms of the post-World War II and Reaganism, and I was wondering if that could be playing a, if you see that playing a role at all with the, you know, just the lack of political discourse and the polarization.
Mm-hmm. Excellent question, Kristen. And I think that goes right to Bryant, your discussion of the state of envy as one of the states of confusion.
Yeah, certainly, envy is a critical point. But Kristen, to talk about healthcare in specific, I do spend a lot of time in the book and have in both volumes of the book on healthcare because it's where a lot of the deceptive kinds of communications play havoc with people's ability to get healthcare. You know, in this country, we have far and away the most expensive healthcare system, and we are not effective in providing and getting access to care for our people. We're the only country that doesn't have a comprehensive federal program of healthcare, and it would be very easy to provide that if we did not get manipulated in the regions of the mind that I talk about in the book. I talk about paranoia. Yes, there's envy, but just in paranoia. When we begin to look at rational schemes for developing a national health insurance system, you have specters of socialism. A few years ago, the Obama administration tried to have you know, end-of-life counseling available to people. They were called death squads.
Mm-hmm. Death panels,
so
you
get the same kind of manipulations that I talk about, generally funded by people who don't want to have to pay for it, by large corporate interests who are trying to scare people out of getting something that could save their lives. So healthcare is a major thrust of the book in terms of the policy implications of these psychological states that I'm talking about.
Let's get another call in here from Liv in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Bryant Welch.
Good morning, gentlemen. I know that you mentioned Fox News, and I personally find it offensive when I go to the airport here that that's the only choice that's on the TV. I disagree that it's MSNBC and is just as bad, but I'll leave that because my main question is, have you taken a look at the airwaves? Because you need a cable. You need cable to see MSNBC. I don't know if you need it to see Fox. But the radio airwaves, there used to be progressive radio. There used to be a station in San Francisco, one in Portland, and one in Seattle. Now you're lucky if you can find a two-hour program anywhere. Those stations were bought over by Clear Channel and turned into sports stations. And I feel like how can we talk to each other when especially our rural neighbors are listening to Rush Limbaugh and those kinds of points of view. You know, I could try to look at Donald Trump as a man, but as soon as he went down that escalator when he did his, when he first said he was going to go for president and called Mexicans what he called them, I couldn't listen to the man after that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's, and I think a lot of people who listen to him hear a lot of it from people like Rush on the airwaves, and I don't know how to combat that.
Yeah, there used to be a fairness doctrine, of course, that required a balance of viewpoints, and that was jettisoned in 1987. But pick it up from there, Bryant.
Yeah, Liv, I think, let me issue a little disclaimer. I did not mean to imply that MSNBC was as bad as Fox News. I merely want to say I think a lot of the techniques, and there are now unfortunate similarities that do concern me, but I would be remiss if I left the impression that I thought MSNBC was as bad as Fox News. I don't. Now, your point, though, about the evaporation, the erosion of thoughtful radio and television programs is of concern, and I do think it's reflective of the kind of mind that I'm describing that is less able to sit and listen to kind of deliberative, contemplative kinds of of programming, because the mind is so agitated that it reaches out for more agitation and more agitation, which is the very opposite psychological state one has to be in if they're going to listen to thoughtful TV programs. And so I think the programming that you're describing is symptomatic of the mind that I'm writing about, and I think they are one and the same. So in terms of how do we address this, there is, I think, some potentially very good news that I talk about in the book, especially the new version of the book, that we've learned a lot about the mind from two real sources, one from our neuroscience and our understanding of psychological trauma. And at the same time, we've had this cross-cultural exchange brought about in part by the Tibetan diaspora of Tibetan scholars and Eastern contemplative scholars coming into this country, creating a cross-fertilization so that we're learning a lot about the human mind with techniques and understanding of how we can address these problems and calm the mind down.
And so the book does finish on an optimistic note, I need to point
out.
Yeah, Bryant Welch, the author of State of Confusion, Political Manipulation, and the Assault of the American Mind. Thank you so much.